illegitimate child cannot in any case ever recover for wrongful death of his father in a situation where the father did not know the child existed. Certainly the child was a 3-month-old fetus at the time. So there was no way under the statutory scheme devised by the legislature for that child or that father to provide for the child. Now, how do we square those two positions, Nelson versus Cruz in this case?
As I recall, Nelson versus Cruz did not involve an illegitimate child.
Well, we had a child.
We had a child.
Who had no statutory scheme whereby he could protect his rights under the Medical Malpractice Act that existed at that time.
Well, Your Honor, I think, in all candor, the illegitimate factor in the interest of the state in protecting against claims of illegitimate children justifies a distinction between this case and the Nelson versus Cruz case.
Counselor, I think the Supreme Court of the United States has indicated we're not going to discriminate between children on the basis of whether or not their parents were married or not. If a child is a child and it's not the child's fault if they were illegitimate.
Your Honor, I'm not arguing the point as to whether or not the issue is between illegitimate and legitimate. It's really illegitimate children whose rights have been established pursuant to the Family Code. And I think the Supreme Court has allowed restrictions in other states on the rights of illegitimate children whose parentage was not determined in accordance with the specific state statute to be denied recovery.
What you're really saying is the common law provided no remedy
for
an illegitimate child, and that the only remedy that can be used is that provided by the legislature, and if the legislature fails to provide a remedy, the court cannot do it.
Should defer to the legislature to do it. I think the legislature is the vehicle to do it. I don't see this case as being like a common law wife situation.
But the U.S. Supreme Court hadn't always followed that rule. When they saw a need for a remedy, they provided one, didn't they?
That is generally true, Justice Ray. But let me say that if this court should decide that we're going to... Edwards versus Jones, for example, was a case in which there was an illegitimate child and an illegitimate grandchild, and there was clear evidence in the record that the grandfather had recognized both of them. There were letters from the father, and this Supreme Court held that those children could not inherit under the probate code. I do not see that this is a common law wife analogy as counsel for the petitioner says, because my recollection of common law marriages, it is based primarily upon the conduct of the husband in his recognition of the wife and in doing something which leads other people to believe that they are husband and wife. And that is totally missing in this case. If this court were to decide that that the class of people who need to be protected include illegitimate, posthumous children, I don't think the court ought to go so far as to establish it in this case, in which there has been not a scintilla of any evidence, no evidence whatsoever that the father even ever acknowledged the child or the pregnancy or that the woman was even allegedly his common law wife. Petitioner has indicated in the brief that he thinks there is some other standalone evidence which would support this matter going to the jury, and Mr. Creeley would like to discuss that with you, and if the court will allow, I will defer to him on those points.
May it please the court. My name is Gene Creeley for respondent. Mr. Jolly indicated I'd like to talk about the alleged standalone evidence as excluding the legitimation decree, individually and then collectively. As you know, the petitioner has asserted that even if the legitimation decree is not worthy of consideration, there's other standalone evidence of the child's paternity. Now, first of all, I'd like to note that this evidence does not meet the standard of proof set out by the legislature for establishing paternity under the Family Code or vis-a-vis the Probate Code. And there is still no evidence of any conduct on the part of the father that he acknowledged, recognized, or otherwise acquiesced to the fact of his child. I think that's very important here. The first piece of evidence that the petitioner cites is Junior's name. And I think this court should be aware of that it is undisputed that the child was born 7.5 months after the death of his alleged father. So by my calculations, the child was only 1.5 months in the womb and not 3 months in the womb, suggested by petitioner.
Which would make it more likely that the father didn't know about the child.
That's correct, Your Honor. And as admitted by petitioner, there is just absolutely no evidence that the father knew he was to be a father. The way I see it, when the child was born, it was the child's mother, and only the child's mother, who unilaterally gave the child its name, Miguel De La Rosa Jr. And that was without the acquiescence or consent of the father. And the way I see it is that is merely a shorthand version of her claim of the child's paternity. Likewise, the recitals on the birth certificate that Miguel De La Rosa was the father is a shorthand version of her claim of the child's paternity. So those shorthand versions are entitled to no independent weight separate apart from her claim. And if her claim, if her testimony of the child's paternity alone is insufficient to establish the child's standing as a child of the alleged father, then these shorthand versions are likewise not entitled to consideration.
Counsel, does that mean that's not allowed to go to the jury for them to determine?
I'm sorry, Your Honor?
Does that mean that that's not allowed to go to the jury for them to determine?
You
say it's not entitled to any consideration? Not entitled to any consideration by anybody?
Well, in answer to your question, as Justice Spears pointed out earlier, we believe that standing is a matter of law. And the legislature and the Family Code has established a minimum standard of proof for establishing paternity. And in this case, that minimum standard proof for establishing paternity has not been met in this case. And therefore, there is not sufficient evidence to establish standing as a matter of law. So that evidence, which does not meet that minimum standard proof, should not be allowed to go to the, or in this case, the plaintiff rests the case. All that evidence is that it did not meet the minimum standard proof, therefore it's a matter of law that should not be standing.
I understand standing is a question of law, but is paternity a question of law? Or is it a question of fact?
I think paternity is ultimately a fact issue. In this case, we're dealing with state interests here, and it's our position that, as recognized in all the Supreme Court decisions that have been cited in our brief, as well as this court's decision in Davis versus Jones, and in Justice Ray's decision in the interest of B&M when he was on the Texarkana Court of Appeals, there are legitimate state interests that justify the imposition of a greater standard, minimum standard of proof for establishing paternity. And these same policy considerations dictate that the uncorroborated testimony of the mother should not be entitled, should be incompetent. Rather, there should be at least some evidence of conduct on the father recognizing or not acknowledging or acquiescing to the fact of the child in order for the courts to even get to that fact issue to impose rights of parenthood on the father. I also like to discuss the other standalone evidence cited by the petitioner. Another piece of evidence that petitioner cites is the testimony of the decedent's mother that she believed the child to be that of her sons. As noted by the Court of Appeals, it is just absolutely clear that she lacks personal knowledge to attest to a knowledge of parentage. And it's clear, too, that that belief is based upon hearsay, based upon what Ms. Garza, the child's mother, told her, and it's just too speculative to be considered any evidence at all. Now,
what about her opinion as to the infant looking like her son? Would that be admissible?
There is no testimony on behalf of the deceased mother to that effect in the record. Okay, and as far as the admissibility...
Maybe I misunderstood Mr. Matlock.
I believe Mr. Matlock said that, but I don't believe that she did testify to that in the record. Rather, her testimony that she just believed that the child, or she recognized or acknowledged the child is that of her son. And there's no testimony from the deceased mother as to any resemblance. Now, again, to your